Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Once and Future Worker: A Vision for the Renewal of Work in America is a nonfiction policy book by Orrin Cass that argues for a major rethinking of American economic priorities. Rather than treating consumer choice, aggregate growth, or higher GDP as the main goals of public policy, Cass places the quality of work at the center of prosperity. The book is best understood as a political economy argument with a strong normative dimension. It claims that a healthy society depends on labor markets that allow ordinary workers to support stable families, participate in communities, and earn social respect through productive activity, written in response to long-running debates over stagnating wages. Globalization, welfare, trade, and labor market change. The book challenges both laissez-faire conservatism and progressive approaches that Cass sees as incomplete. Its purpose is not simply to diagnose economic frustration, but to propose a framework for rebuilding work as a foundation of national life. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, work, not consumption, as the center of prosperity. Cass's most important claim is that economic policy should be judged by how well it supports meaningful work rather than how much it increases consumption. He rejects the familiar idea that a larger economic pie automatically solves social problems, arguing instead that prosperity is hollow if workers cannot build stable lives from their earnings. This shifts the focus from consumer welfare to producer welfare production, creates independence, skills, and civic contribution, while consumption without production can foster dependence. The argument is deliberately confrontational because it challenges a long bipartisan consensus that treats growth as an almost self-justifying goal. Cass does not deny that growth matters, but he insists it is only one input into a broader conception of national health. In this framework, labor is not just a means to income. It is a source of dignity, responsibility, and social cohesion. That reordering of priorities is the book's conceptual foundation and the reason it has been so influential in debates about post-industrial America. Secondly, productive pluralism as an alternative to economic piety. To replace what he criticizes as economic piety, Cass proposes productive pluralism, a framework aimed at creating conditions in which people with different abilities, aspirations, and geographic situations can still become self-supporting contributors to society. The phrase matters because it signals that he is not endorsing a single ideal worker or a uniform industrial model. Instead, he argues for a labor market and public policy environment that makes productive lives possible across many kinds of jobs and communities. Productive pluralism is meant to reconnect economics with social formation. Families, neighborhoods, and local institutions depend on people having durable work, not merely access to cheap goods or transfer payments. This concept also helps explain why Cass criticizes both market fundamentalism and policy approaches that treat redistribution as a substitute for employment. The book presents productive pluralism as a practical philosophy of social organization, not an abstract slogan. It asks whether institutions are enabling citizens to produce value, support dependents, and develop habits of responsibility, or whether they are instead encouraging passivity and fragmentation. Thirdly, policy tools for making work pay again. A large part of the book is devoted to policy mechanisms Cass believes could strengthen the labor market for less skilled workers. Among his favorite tools are wage subsidies, an expanded and modernized earned income tax credit, and other incentives that reduce the effective cost of hiring workers. He also discusses reforms to education and training so that workers are better matched to current labor demand, along with a more limited immigration policy and changes to the welfare system. The logic behind these proposals is consistent. If the market does not naturally deliver enough decent jobs for ordinary workers, government should shape incentives so that employers create them and workers can better access them. Cass is trying to move beyond the usual split between tax cuts and transfers by making employment itself the object of policy design. These prescriptions are consequential because they show that the book is not only a critique of the status quo, but an attempt to articulate a concrete pro-worker conservatism. Whether readers agree with the details or not, the policy section is where the abstract argument becomes operational. Fourthly, a critique of both free market and progressive orthodoxies, Cass argues that both political parties have neglected the worker, though in different ways. On the right, he sees an overreliance on growth, free trade, and deregulation, accompanied by a tendency to assume that rising aggregate wealth will eventually benefit everyone. On the left, he sees a tendency to privilege redistribution, environmental priorities, and identity-based concerns while underestimating the importance of markets, productive capacity, and labor market structure. The book is strongest when it presents this as a shared failure of elite assumptions rather than a partisan complaint. Cass's target is the broader consensus that measures success through consumption, flexible markets, and post-tax redistribution while leaving the structure of work largely untouched. By framing the problem this way, He turns the book into a critique of political habit as much as of policy content. His argument helps explain why the book has drawn attention from both conservatives and progressives. It offers a vocabulary for dissatisfaction with the existing ideological map. Even critics often acknowledge that Cass identifies a real weakness in mainstream economic thinking, namely its indifference to whether workers can secure stable lives through work. Lastly, The Social Meaning of Labor and the Case for a Renewed Work Ethic Beyond Economics, the book emphasizes the cultural and social meaning of work. Cass argues that employment should be understood as a source of family stability, civic participation, and moral formation, not merely as a route to private income. This is why he treats labor market decline as a social crisis rather than just a technical one. If work becomes scarce, precarious, or devalued, the consequences extend to marriage, child-rearing, health, and community life. The book therefore asks readers to rethink attitudes toward welfare, non-work, and social respect. Cass does not simply praise hard work in the abstract. He tries to show that societies function better when productive effort is widely expected and honored. This aspect of the book makes it stand out from conventional economic policy writing, which often avoids moral language. It also explains its appeal to readers who want an account of why the post-industrial economy feels socially thinner, even when many material indicators improve. In Cass's view, a healthy nation requires not just higher income, but a culture that makes work central to belonging and responsibility. In conclusion, The Once and Future Worker is best suited for readers interested in political economy, conservative reform, labor market policy, and the relationship between economics and social life. It will be especially useful to policymakers, students of public policy, journalists, and general readers who want a serious challenge to the idea that growth and consumption are sufficient measures of progress. The book offers intellectual benefits even for readers who disagree with Cass because it forces a re-examination of assumptions about wages, trade, immigration, welfare, and the purpose of employment. Its main practical value lies in reframing work as a social institution rather than a narrow market outcome, which helps connect economic debate to family stability and community health. What makes it stand out from many books in the same genre is that it is not simply a defense of free markets, nor a conventional appeal for redistribution. Instead, it tries to construct a third position centered on productive employment and the dignity of labor. That combination of critique, policy design, and cultural argument gives the book a distinctive place in contemporary American debate. If you would like to support Oren Cass, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.